From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 476, Getting Into Machine Learning with guest Buck Woody. Recorded Monday, May 23rd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest is a returner, but it's been entirely too long. This is Buck Woody, and he works on the Microsoft Machine Learning and Data Science team using data and technology to solve business and science problems. With over 30 years of professional and practical experience in computer technology, he's also a popular speaker at many conferences around the world and the author of over 650 articles and 7 books on database and machine learning technologies. He teaches database courses and sits on the data science board at the University of Washington and specializes in data analytics techniques. This is a nice brief bio for 30 years of professional and practical experience. I suspect you've done a few other things too, sir.
Yes, and some of them for money. Yes, it's a polite way of saying I'm old. What do they say? We didn't really have computers when I was little. We just yelled zeros and ones at each other.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. I also appreciate that our mindset, because I'm coming on in the 40-year range now too, we remember a time before computers. So we are immigrants. As much as we are enthusiasts, we're still immigrants to this. And I think I think we're more excited about it than folks that grow up with it.
Yeah, I remember a time when, the computer guy, and it was mostly guys, sadly, were somebody who had a soldering iron as well as wrote code,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
You wrote your own, I wrote my first OS in assembly, and I first thing I had to write was a debugger for my assembly code because I didn't have a debugger. But the point was that you would see that it kind of came home to me. I can't remember when it was, 90 something, when there were two guys that were older in the grocery store, and one was talking about hooking up his modem. And no one even knew that term outside my little circle for many, many years. And I was amazed that that had come into the standard lingua franca of everybody. And now, of course, people are far more technical than they've ever been. In some ways, technical users, maybe not understanding the underlying principles. But you have to wonder, do you need to? I don't know. Do I need to know how my car works to drive it well?
Well, exactly. I mean, the funny thing is now the modem's fallen out of the vernacular. Nobody knows what that thing is anymore.
Exactly. That's that's old hat.
And yeah.
I literally have used an acoustically coupled modem. And,
yep.
And I doubt people even know what that looks like or is.
I keep a picture of it in a slide deck because the other thing they don't recognize? Rotary dial phone. What is that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we still say dial the phone, don't we?
We sure do. And we still have, the floppy disk symbol for save and like all of these weird icons that don't mean anything anymore. But you are clearly working on some of the latest, hippest stuff right now. How did you end up in the data science group? I have not heard of these people.
Yeah. So I started at Microsoft about 10 years ago on the SQL Server team. And so SQL Server 2008 was my product.
Right.
And
a perfectly respectable job storing data properly. This I get.
There you go. And this is kind of funny because, back in the 60s, we sort of solved this problem of, linked files that we're so fond of now. Everybody loves JSON files and things now. And we sort of solved all the problems they're rediscovering with this cool new thing called the relational calculus, and RDBMSs, but I digress. I was on the SQL team for a long time. And then when I shipped my product, the particular group I was in at Microsoft actually shipped not only SQL Server, but Management Studio,
right,
which is technically part of Visual Studio.
Yeah.
So I actually got two Ship It awards. one of those for SQL Server and the other for Visual Studio. So that was kind of cool. And right after I shipped it, I said, I want to go out in the field. And everybody said, you're crazy. You know, sales and support and consulting, no one wants to do that from the engineering team. The engineering team is best. And I said, nope, that's what I want to do. So I left on sort of the high note. I had done well and went to the field and then did real well in the field, working in the Pacific Northwest on SQL Server for large scale customers, big name customers, and really enjoyed that. And then this thing called Red Dog came out.
Precursor to Azure.
I said, I'm going to that. And, they said, you're crazy. Why would anyone leave a boxed product? You're doing well. Everybody likes you. What are you doing? This is crazy. No one's ever going to use that. And I mean, that's internally.
Yeah.
We sell software. What are you doing? And I said, look, I was here during the mainframes. This is distributed computing done right. And I went and it was awful and it was hard and no one had ever heard of it. And it was just really, really tough. And then when Azure graduated, meaning it came out of incubation at Microsoft and became an actual product, I jumped out again. And I said, well, I was at headquarters at the time, so I was one of the worldwide technical specialists on it. And I jumped out again. And I said, I want to go back home to Florida. And so I worked for the Department of Defense as a contractor for Microsoft, of course, but in MCS and Microsoft Consulting Services. And did that for a year. And then I saw a position open in the machine learning and data science team, MLADS. And I said, I want that. And so I went and interviewed with the people that were responsible for writing Revolution Analytics, R.
Now owned by Microsoft.
Now purchased by Microsoft. And these guys are, and ladies are, the smartest people you'll ever meet. I was definitely the special needs kid in that particular group. And they brought me on sort of as a, I think it's just a special case.
Nice.
So no, it was great. They're just amazing people and incredibly bright, but I did bring a lot of Azure experience.
Sure.
So they have that sort of machine learning and data science background. And I had a lot of it as well. In a different vector, but a lot of that same knowledge. So I had to pass all the tests and do all the things. But once that happened and I got on board, we've now come out with, as you heard, you know, the Cortana Intelligence Suite used to be called Cortana Analytics. And so our team is responsible for getting folks up to speed on that teaching.
Well, even being thinking back to SQL 2008, I mean, it had an OLAP service
and it had
data mining too.
Yep,
so,
still does.
I mean, all of this stuff is kind of there. Like, what makes this different from what we've had for a decade?
Yeah, that is an absolutely fantastic question. And I always get the question of, so is this the new thing and we're not doing the old thing? No, not at all. So, you know, obviously we had data before and we would analyze it with pretty much querying.
You know,
we'd either write code to do linked lists and files and so on and all these kinds of things in COBOL. And then, you know, we had the SQL language where we could structure our queries in a declarative way and bring back data. And you could get really, really complex with those questions. And you could explore the data or change it in some way using those languages.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the next thing that people wanted was reporting. And so we came up with reporting and there was just an absolute ton of ways to do that, which behind the scenes runs these SQL queries that gives you data that you look at. And then as time went on, the data sizes got larger and larger and you wanted to combine them. And so you had this idea that kind of bifurcated. You had business intelligence and then you had sort of data mining.
Right.
And those are two different things. They're complementary, but they're two different things. They're, if you know BI, you don't necessarily know data mining and vice versa. So with the BI, we're able to come up with new shapes of data that relax some of these ACID properties we need for inserts and optimize for reads. We sort of pre-compute our answers.
Well, and most of the time we only cared about the aggregate anyway, right? You only want the level of granularity was no more than sales by the hour or sales by the day. So, you know, I was just trying to save disk space and query time, right?
That's true.
You know, I read Ralph Kimball's old book. It's like, you are on the thread of intuition here. Don't interrupt it.
That's right. And by the way, I spoke at a conference with him one time. What an amazing guy.
That's awesome. That's one of my heroes I haven't met. I mean, I met Nolan Bushnell. I met CJ Date, Chris Date.
Yep, nicest
guy in the world, right?
But, yeah.
You know, one of the people responsible for the relational database. But yeah, Ralph Kimball's book was very evocative for me of this idea that we are pursuing an idea in data, and we got to have tools that make it easy to do that.
And that's exactly what BI does, is it gives us the ability to explore historical data. And then in data mining, we're able to do a couple of things. We're able to use some of these descriptive methods to explore patterns we hadn't seen before. And then we were also able to do a little bit of predictive work within data mining that goes the next step from BI that says, okay, now not just, you know, what happened and why did it happen, but what will happen.
Right. The predictive analytics side.
There you go. And now with this new data science term, it's an overloaded term, mm-hmm. as they always are.
Yes.
But the general idea is that it is birthed out of sort of three big areas in my mind. One is data mining. It actually has a lot of the data mining concepts built within it. Mm-hmm. Data mining has a lot of inferential and probabilistic statistics in it, math, and those same formulas extrapolate very well over into data science and machine learning.
Right.
And those, by the way, those two things are different too. But the data mining has these things that form the basis of some machine learning. Some of the artificial intelligence, especially the neural networks that were popular in the 80s and 90s, yes. have melded over into this. And then you tack in some of these newer technologies that allow you to work with distributed computing. So tack in the stats, tack in the data mining, tack in the artificial intelligence, and then these new tools, and you sort of have machine learning.
Right.
Where we're able to do two big things. I'm able to dump some data on the ground and say, show me what's interesting about those things. And it will start saying, how many things do you want them to have in common for you to think they're interesting? Because if I said, let's put Richard Campbell and Buck Woody's information together, but only show me one vector that, and they would say, well, they're both male. And right. that wouldn't be very interesting. But if I were to say, show me where we intersect in maybe five dimensions, it might say, well, you both have this education and you have this background and you've both met CJ Date and so on. Now those become interesting. I can use that information. So that's called unsupervised learning, meaning the machine has the ability to reach out with various mathematical methods across big sets of data and categorize it. And it's kind of where you get this idea of, you know, people who like this movie also like this movie.
Right.
And so now we've got some things where I can predict from information I didn't know I had before. And then the other side is something that's called supervised learning, where I know an answer about a certain thing. I've watched Richard and I know when he'll buy a cup of coffee,
right.
let's say. And so I put all the information called features around the decision that Richard made, and bought coffee equals yes or bought coffee equals no. And now what I can do is once I've let the math loose on that, it can kind of figure out. And then I can say, now here's Buck Woody. Do you think he'll buy a coffee at 3 o'clock next Friday? And it goes across, and because it has, and I'm using air quotes with my little claw hands, that say, yes, I think it will, because these factors have been a part of that over these thousands of people that look like Buck Woody, and he will, in fact, buy coffee at 3 o'clock with this level of certainty. So machine learning falls out into those two big areas. And then data science involves not only machine learning, but many, many other new techniques. And I think that's its salient characteristic, is that it's varied. It's incredibly varied. There's a lot of tools. There's a lot of processes. There's a lot of disciplines that are involved. And it almost requires that you've had some domain experience around finance and healthcare and military and whatever.
Right. Domain experience in this given data set. Where did this data come from? How is it related to itself?
Well, not only that, and certainly that, but not only that, it also has this idea of a cross-domain specialist. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we do at Microsoft is we actually encourage people every few years to change roles. We don't We don't actually encourage that you stay in your same job for years and years.
And you have never needed much encouragement.
I've taken that to a really big extreme. Every 2 years, I've had five roles in 10 years at Microsoft.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
And he was when my boss went to hire me this time, he said, "What does that say about you? I mean, were you asked to leave any of these places?" And I said, "Well, it shows I'm no quitter."
this is using my ADD for fun and profit.
That's what I'm saying. New things interest me.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's that cross domain experience that we like at Microsoft. We actually would court people in the SQL team who had been on Office or who'd been at Xbox and vice versa. And that wasn't considered a bad thing. That was considered good cross pollination. And it's that way in data science. And it's a young discipline. It's actually been around longer than it feels like, but it's fairly young. And I've always made the statement when I've counseled people about their job, you know, searching and so on. Whenever you're in an immature industry, you should generalize.
Right.
And when you're in a mature industry, you should specialize.
That's really good advice, Buck. I really appreciate that. Hey, give me one sec to pay the bills here, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for the DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all: infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center, on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started with Chef today at chef.io/runasradio. Now, if there's data science, are there data scientists?
Yeah. So then we bring the scientific process to bear.
Right.
And so what we think about here is the idea of what is the scientific method, right? We come up with a hypothesis. Well, we come up with a question first, then we have a hypothesis. Like lots of people buy coffee on Friday at 3 o'clock.
Right.
So I hypothesize that it's must be going on sale at that time. And then we create a test for our hypothesis. And we create a null test as well. We say people are not buying it because it's on sale. And we actually try the interesting thing in the scientific method is you attempt to prove yourself wrong.
Right. But that is the scientific method, right? Like that assumption of, hey, people buy coffee at 3 o'clock, let's give them a discount. That seems like a terrible thing to do. If people are already buying coffee, this is your time to make money.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the question might actually be in that shape. What should we do to make them buy even more coffee? Would a discount work? And that's actually a great data science question. You can actually test that with mathematical methods. You could check prices in the past and see if demand has met that with the increased price, and if demand went down because of that or up.
Yep.
Because sometimes it does. You can create a false sense of scarcity and so on. So, you're exactly right. And with this scientific method, then when you're done, you actually publish your findings. That's another thing that's a little different. Most of us, when we get our SQL statements right within a particular program, we don't actually like call Brent Ozar and say, so, here's what I did. What do you think? We don't tend to do that, but in data science, that's exactly what you do.
Hmm.
And so the Cortana Intelligence Suite is a bunch of products. That's its other defining factor, is that it's not a tool. There are lots of them. There's HD Insight, which is Hadoop. There's Azure ML, which is machine learning. There's Microsoft R Server. There's SQL Server. There's SQL Data Warehouse, and on and on and on. So we take these things, and for instance, in the Azure ML Studio, you've got the ability where I could invite Richard to my experiment. I create an experiment. It looks a lot like SSIS, but I can invite Richard to look at it. And Richard can then play around with the algorithms and go, no, you don't want a two-class boosted decision forest here. You want a two-class boosted decision tree, but make sure you keep the leaves to only 20, blah, blah, blah. So once we're done, I can then, we call it operationalize because we love to make up new words, but we can then deploy that by simply clicking it and saying, okay, that's now an API. And this tool then, this is kind of what Microsoft's bringing to this whole data science game, is number one, this collaborative feature. And then secondly, this ability to quickly deploy it. I deploy it, and by right-clicking and saying deploy, it makes it into a web service, number one. Number two, it gives me the code for Python, R, and C# to call the web service. And it even, Lord help us all, gives me an Excel spreadsheet. So now I can put all my customers' information in, just like we've studied Richard to see if he'd buy the coffee.
Right.
I can now have my salespeople fill out a spreadsheet with the salient characteristics I care about and have it click a button and say, who's going to buy coffee on Friday? And it will spit out a list on the other side back into Excel. Here they are.
What's funny is most of us started with Excel doing our own kind of analytics there. And now we're back to Excel after all this much more advanced stuff going on, you know, consolidates the information into a set that we can work with.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we all know, right? I've got a universal computing diagram out on one of my blogs, which has a picture of a database on one side, an arrow pointing to the right, and an Excel icon on the right-hand side. And
it's the truth.
It's just every program I've ever written for anybody, after I show them the twirling map with the gauges and flaming logos, they look at it and go, that's awesome. Can you put that in Excel? And, you know, there just needs to be an export to Excel button pretty much. And that just needs to be a universal button. Yeah. But I mean, it is people's love language and they get it. And once you've learned it, there's nothing wrong with that. So rather than fight it, we've just put it to where you can call this much larger. Let's say Richard is our data scientist. He does the heavy lifting of getting that algorithm trained,
right?
And trustable. And then now I, as a regular old Excel user, can leverage Richard's knowledge and get the answer back. And essentially I'm using a big Excel function in the sky. That's the long and short of it. Now that's Azure ML alone. We have lots of other products that are part of that whole, you know, that whole suite.
Now, the question is, do I stay away from Azure ML unless I have a data scientist available? Or what does it take to become one? Like, where are the requirements here?
Yeah. So there is a bar. So I remember back in, it must have been 89, I guess. I went to a symposium. I was working at NASA at the time. And I went over to a symposium that IBM was giving on this new thing called business intelligence and in Orlando, Florida. And so we went to the Swan Hotel there and they had a big thing. And the Microsoft guys got up and said, one of these days, we're going to put BI in a box and everybody's going to be able to do it. And they were laughed out of the building because they were told that's just not possible. You need so much education. You need 30 years of math.
Right.
This is crazy. You will always need a team. Well, here was I still remember all the numbers, a team of 5 and 18 months.
Right.
That was a BI project in the late 80s and early 90s. And, so then, you know, obviously, as you know, Microsoft started working on these things and I was not working here then, but, they started working on these things. And, you know, with SSAS, with analysis services, and reporting services, I mean, not just anybody can do it. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that a well-educated person can, in fact, do BI in a box. You don't need 18 months and you don't need 5 people. A well-trained small team and a short time period with good questions can get you a BI project that is largely successful. I've seen it done. So that being said, we now move to the world of data science, and there's a pretty advanced amount of math. So you're going to need some linear algebra. You got to have that. You just do. And you've got to have descriptive and predictive, probabilistic and so on statistics, and a lot of the linear statistics, and especially a lot of the regression, the nonlinear regression as well.
Right.
So they're non-trivial. It should not be made to sound elitist because it's not.
I don't need a PhD in statistics to do this.
All the people on my team have a PhD in statistics. So yeah,
you work for the team building the tools, man.
I know these guys are data scientists.
Yes, literally.
They really are. And you really do. I mean, I have to fight the math all the time. It's non-trivial. So I do have a blog. So it's just buckwoody.wordpress.com. If you go out there, you'll see I've got a body of knowledge that you could kind of follow to be a data scientist. So you've got the maths first. And again, that's pretty much algebra and stats, linear algebra and stats. and a lot of stats. I mean, a lot. And then you're going to need some background in data, in computing science, understanding things like logic, you know, the formal logic and so on. You do sort of need that. And you are going to need, these tools. You're going to need to know R or Hadoop or both.
Right.
You can use R in Hadoop and so on. And then you're going to need to either self-educate or go to some classes where you learn machine learning, to do it. And the easiest thing to do is you can just go out there and just use your favorite web search engine, Bing, and search up, you know, data science curriculum, mm-hmm. and you'll find it. I've got mine out there. There are others. University of Washington, where I teach, has a course you can take online and so on. It is non-trivial right now. It really is. But as I mentioned, it's young.
Right. Yeah. And you do need to be a generalist.
You kind of got to generalize. And so that's a lot to stuff in your head. And so, but as time goes on and as Microsoft and Google and Amazon and all the rest of these guys start sort of boxing these things up and making them into a pocket calculator, I foresee in the future that the field will be much wider, that there'll be a lot more people in it.
Well, it seems like it has gotten simpler. I mean, what is the impact that Azure's had on this as a whole? Like, why wouldn't I just do this all on-prem?
You certainly could do it on-prem. Mm-hmm. We have methods for you to be able to do that. We have R in SQL Server 2016 now.
Right.
You can install Microsoft R Server locally. You can use the Parallel Data Warehouse, the APS, right? The new box, mm-hmm. where you have a Hadoop region. You can install HD Insight locally and so on. You can certainly do that. However, let me just give you an example. Let's say, for instance, I need to crunch through an amazing amount of data, do some R work to that.
Right.
And I need to do that periodically. Let's say once a month or something. This is not a query I'm going to run. It's a crunching I'm going to do, mm-hmm. to do some strategic, not tactical, but strategic planning. What I can do is I can do all that on-prem, and I'll need pretty much to buy a Formula One race car to race one time a year.
Right.
Or I could stand up the HD Insight service in Azure, pump the data into Blob Storage, and then crunch it from Blob. I can mount Blob Storage inside HD Insight with maybe some Spark R clusters. And I could just crunch through just hideous amounts of data. And then what I can do in the cloud that I can't do on premises is I can just ditch the service. I'm done. I turn it off. I quit paying for it.
Right. Just give it all back.
You're done. You just give it all back. But the point is that the data, the results, and you're doing sort of a domain reduction here. You're taking, you know, billions and trillions of lines, mm-hmm. of data points, and you're bringing them down into the thousands. Once I've pumped that out, then I can leave that in storage, which is dirt cheap, but turn all the computers off and give them back.
Right.
And I can't do that on premises. And with these things, you don't often just use a data source. You're combining all your IoT with weather and with economic factors and with, you know, exchange rates across the world. So, if you're out in the cloud anyway, for those numbers, pulling it into the cloud is sort of no big deal. I mean, we think about the amount of exhaust, the data exhaust people are creating now. I was reading a thing the other day. I've got the resource for it, but it said that 90% of all the data that we have in recorded on the planet today, and I'm talking about since we recorded writing in the Sumerian age, you know, 5,000 something years ago,
right?
All of it. 90% of it was created in the last 3 years.
Wow.
That boggles my mind.
Yeah.
And it said that by 2020 or 2030, there will be 1.7 megabytes per minute per person on the planet.
I'm just not that interesting, you know?
Well, think about it. What are you wearing right now as far as like a device? Do you have a smartphone?
Oh, I mean, it's away from the recording system, so it doesn't make noises. But, you know, I've got a microphone and a headphones on and, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Yeah, we do have this digital extension to our body, right? The thing that makes us a cyborg.
Exactly. The Fitbit And that's got, you know, the Microsoft one has what, 12 sensors on it or something?
Yeah, I've got one of those.
And, you know, you got the phone, and that's just, if you've ever taken a look at what it's at rest, air quotes again, pumping out, you, because you're a technologist, are probably tripling.
That actual number.
Right.
Does this speak to the whole concept of the data lake? Because I know lots of folks are sort of, what is this? Why do I need another data thing?
Yeah. So for Microsoft, we have a product called the Azure Data Lake. And what that does is it's comprised of two parts. It's the distributed storage that you might find in something like Hadoop. In fact, you can run Hive jobs and other things that are in the Hadoop ecostructure on it. And then it's got a new querying layer. So it's not all of the zoo from Hadoop. It's a service, and you're able to query it with various things. One of those is including a language called uSQL, which is made to look more like just SQL. So for those people who just need to query large amounts of data, let's say I wanted to do some analysis on all of my Microsoft band devices. That would be a perfect place to dump that. I could use Stream, you know, the Azure data hubs to bring in data and dump it into the lake. Then I can query that lake, and then I can pump the results out to SQL Data Warehouse, do some BI on it, simultaneously pump this data out to Azure ML to do some predictions on it, and simultaneously pump that out, the results of those predictions, into SQL DB and look at it with Power BI or Excel.
Nice. So it becomes this, I like the idea that it's just a repository for the data as it is. You know, we were always so big on the ELT process because storage was so expensive. You had to get the data organized right away. The storing raw just didn't make sense, and it took too long to compute. But cloud sort of blows that idea up. It just doesn't matter anymore.
No, and you said it exactly right. It's not ETL. It's not extract, transform, and load anymore that we do in BI, which again has not gone away.
Right.
But now we do extract, load, and then we transform at the last possible step. Once again, because when we think about science, every time you touch that data, you've changed the fidelity of that data. Even converting a one from ASCII into a one binary changes its intent somehow in ways we might not expect. And so the general idea is you do just dump it. You just dump it raw as you can keep it. And then when you're going to do the analysis at the end, you decide how to transform, often using that tool.
Right.
So R has its own kinds of transforms, and Hadoop has its own kinds of transforms. And so you may want to keep it as raw as you can, as long as you can, so that you get a very accurate answer.
And the change here is that storage has gotten inexpensive, and that compute has gotten elastic. So the idea that you would pre-compute everything to pursue a given set of values, like, you don't need to do that. You can recompute on demand with different tools in different ways. And maybe, you know, the most interesting data is the stuff around the edges.
Yeah.
Right? Not the stuff you knew, but the stuff you were sure didn't exist.
Right.
And I've seen transform and load mechanisms that have shaved the edges off data in the process.
Or change the question. So here's a thought. You know, we spend an absolute ton of money in this country, and I mean a ton, more than anyone else, on defense, on military. And I was military. I was in the Air Force, and I've lived overseas on military bases, and I worked for the Department of Defense. I'm probably one of the most staunch defenders of the military there is. However, one wonders if you could ferret out the root causes.
Right.
Of some of the things that would cause a conflict to occur. And this goes all the way back to Sun Tzu. Sure. If you can ferret out the root cause, the best, as Bruce Lee used to say, the best way to win a fight is not to fight.
Yeah.
And so if I could ferret out that feeding this particular village in this one place would stop, if I could really with certainty, and you can't always.
No.
But if I could really ferret that out, it would be cheaper. By any number of measures, cheaper to do that than perhaps to buy a new tank or aircraft, you know, that kind of thing. And in some cases, maybe it's not. Maybe the only answer is to blow things up. But maybe the answer is not. Maybe there's other ways to solve that. Maybe there's other ways to feed us. How could I make Richard eat a bug burger and him not be grossed out by it.
Exactly.
Right? So these are some interesting, it's a fantastic time to be alive.
Yeah.
But there is the Ultron effect. You do have to be careful that we can invent things we don't understand.
Yes.
There are certain algorithms. Boosted decision trees are one of those that are like a pachinko machine. You drop the ball in at the top and you don't know when you see at the bottom, you don't know which nails it hit. Each nail that it hit on the way down, as it fills up the little bins, was determined by the nail above it. And so you can't really go back. So some of these algorithms can't even be used in calculating certain stock things for publicly held companies, because one of the SEC rules is you have to be able to show your math. And these things are literal black boxes to where you can never go back and recreate how they came up with their number.
Yeah, that's one of the concerns that folks have always had with the neural networks is you can't really figure out from a given set of training what tipped it one way or the other.
No, that's correct. That is true.
It's very challenging.
When you then base things on that.
Yes.
My personal politics, I've been asked recently because of our political situation here in the U.S.
You guys are having quite the rodeo.
Yeah, well, actually, I am of the PowerShell party. Right. I would like to replace government with a 42-line PowerShell script. So, but you know, there's unintended consequences that something might decide we're a virus or whatever and wipe us all out.
Yes,
you know, and so these things are a futurist kind of questions. But you know, again, back in the 30s and 40s, they envisioned the future. They said by 2015, the major problem people were going to have was finding something to do because we were going to be so efficient that you'd get most of your day back and you would have no work to do because there'd be no poverty, no hunger. It was just going to be, we were just going to automate ourselves right out of things to do for a living.
And it's starting to feel like you can see that from here now these days.
I don't know. Well, we're certainly getting rid of our jobs, but we're certainly not looking. I don't know about you, but I my biggest problem is finding time to actually sleep and eat. You know, it has not gotten, I don't have more leisure time. I've got far less.
Yeah. But I think part of that is we are at the edge of this. You're clearly exploring the edge of this whole mechanism. And I think it's wildly fun stuff. This is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So where do you point folks to get started here, Buck?
So there's a couple places. The first is buckwoody, all one word, .wordpress.com. And if you go to that, that's called Backyard Data Science, Precision Guesswork While You Wait.
Nice.
If you scroll down a little bit, right at the top there is Prepping for Learning Data Science. And I've got a little outline of what you need to do, and those will branch out into, you know, those are big rooms. It's a little room with a lot of doors that lead to much bigger rooms. And then just below that is something called the Amateur Data Science Body of Knowledge, which is kind of a syllabus, if you will. And then there's a whole bunch of other things I've got about learning statistics and knowing more about Python and R and all those kinds of things and data visualizations and so on. That's a good place to start. And within those articles, I've got just absolutely a ton of stuff. And I take you from, well, Herbert Dreyfuss is the guy that came up with levels of learned skill from beginning to master.
Right.
And so I take you through those.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this resource, Buck. I'm going to start reading this. I think it's fantastic.
It's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. It really is.
All right. And thanks for being on the show. I hope to talk to you again.
Hey, it's good to see you again. Hopefully, you're one of my airport friends.
Yes.
See you only in airport locations or at some conference, right?
Or a conference, one place to the other. Absolutely. Thank you, Buck.
All right, my friend.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.